It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
You're talking about three flags by 2020.
Fitzroy has played more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010. Carmichael Hunt. Look at Jeffrey. He does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney.
West on to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Can he just slow? He's gone.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Tigers. And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And it's 2022. And I can believe it, but I'm pretty frustrated that we still seem to be doing this COVID thing, Andy.
Yes. And I'm really excited about that there's no crowd claps caps on the AFLW games or the AFL men's coming up. It is slightly scary that half the AFL, according to media reports, half the AFL men's players have tested positive for COVID, which I guess if you were to look at the most optimistic scenario, means that they'll have immunity for the first part of the season, hopefully. It's certainly all present, isn't it?
There's been a fair bit of discussion about the AFL's crash through policy, and you know the women. It's been a really challenging season, you know, and you're asking so much of part-time athletes, particularly the Western Australian players who've in some cases been away from home for so long. And so, look, the lesson is clear for AFLM that, you know, they'll push through. They don't want to delay games or have the floating fixture again. But it's not easy. Nothing about it feels easy.
It's not easy, and we definitely can't talk since we haven't had a podcast since for basically 2 months. We can't, because of our own personal distractions, we certainly can't fault people.
Don't move house in the midst of a pandemic is certainly advice I'd give to anyone.
Yep. So so apologies for the delay in the podcast, but it is through no lack of interest and enthusiasm in both seasons that the forthcoming
we've been pretty distracted. We did get to meet each other in person for the first time in nearly 2 years, so that was fun.
That was exciting, and we look forward to doing going to some games together shortly. And
I know.
And seeing you melt down with nerves. I've really missed seeing that in person. I will say, just on a positive note about the COVID thing, it was definitely chaos in the AFL women's season. Probably isn't long enough to reach equilibrium, but there was in sort of the NFL, which is probably the closest thing in equivalence to the AFL, it's a once a week season, is that after a while and sort of COVID got through and it was chaos for a few weeks, it did really settle down. And now we're going in the playoffs and in the Super Bowl, it's having hardly any impact now on the season. So
there is
not to downplay it, but
you did see a particular impact where sort of whole groups of guys who all play the same position got COVID and couldn't play. And I think that's a real risk no matter what protocols you have, because inevitably position groups spend a fair bit of time with each other. Look, they're...
Yeah, I definitely not playing down that it was chaos, but it did... There was a definite curve, and you got to the other side, and now they're in some relatively clear air. Look, Nick, you know,
clear air. Like we've been playing top up players pretty much all season, and you know it's a much smaller list for the AFL W, but you know it's we've been struggling in some cases to have emergencies. So, you know, it's just been okay. I think for the men having the bigger list of 44, probably means we can get through the season a bit more smoothly. But yeah, may not be much fun.
Look, I think, like I said, I think the NFL is a better comparison than AFL W in some ways, because of just the list size, and it's in no slight to that. You have a broader depth to play on, and look, the season's still fun, and it's a lot of work if you're a player.
That's true. It's much more fun having them play than not, and you know, maybe I'd probably, you know, be a bit more positive about it if our AFLW team had beaten the Bulldogs on the weekend, you know.
And yeah, and I think that's a really good put. There's more than one thing going on with the AFLW team, and it's not all about COVID.
I know, although it does, one of the things about injuries that we've talked about is just you can always cope with one or two injuries normally, but it's when you get down to the third or fourth best player in a position group that things really start to break down. So yeah, I think we've seen that in the women, and I think that'll be the big key for the men. I think if you get both injuries and COVID on top of each other, that's when it really goes south.
And you know, let's be honest, the men probably relatively to their competition is probably the overall quality of the list is deeper.
Yeah, you know, we've got a better list when they're not all injured.
Yeah, multiple premiership players. So the Nick, I'm going to confess three really bad calls I've had about AFLW in this podcast, and the first one's sort of the biggest one, and it was after the first game, which was so much fun.
The first game was great, like as an occasion and as a result.
Look, ground looked beautiful. The ground football, looked beautiful. Our football was great. We had two rucks dominating, so you know I was happy. Everything was going right except for Poppy Kelly's injury.
Gabby Seymour has been one of the success stories of the season.
Yeah, we can come back. Anyway, it was all working in round one, and it looked great. The spectacle was wonderful.
Yeah, I thought the kicking off the season with the game down in Frankston, good crowd. Yeah, it was fun.
It was, and I think we're in a very Richmond Tiger talk way. We're not talking about the best player, and there's one thing that's absolutely definite about this season is that Monique Conti has reached another level.
Oh yeah, they're not playing basketball. Look, her stats aren't a world better than last season, but they are better. And, you know, she's second in the competition in clearances and contested possessions, and look, the unfortunately, you know, probably in large part to Ellie McKenzie's injury, but the we've had Katie Brennan up forward, unfortunately dependent on her for goals, particularly with Courtney Wakefield being out, and with Ellie McKenzie being out for all but one game, and one game where there was clearly some rust. Midfield's been pretty dependent on Monconti.
Look, because I'm a miserable, sad bastard and shouldn't be invited to parties, I did actually investigate a thesis about whether Monconti is a bad team, good stats player, and I can absolutely assure you that analysis doesn't stand up. Monconti is just... she's getting all the inside ball, as you pointed out. Also, but it's not junk stats. She's also got a higher disposal efficiency than the other people. So she's using the ball more effectively than the other people getting that much inside ball. And her meters gained is, I think it's in the top five. I haven't checked it this week, but it's also extremely good. So she's both getting it in a lot of difficult situations, but also using it effectively and you know, gaining yards and doing the things that win football games. So whatever else you can say about this season, it's a triumph for Monconti.
Mm. We've mentioned the injuries already, but after we'd had relatively good luck, particularly with knee injuries, our first couple of seasons, that's really come home to roost, but particularly... Harriet Cordner has been a huge loss, but seeing Hannah Birchall go down, Laura McCohen go down, it's been a pretty tough season.
Yeah, so the second of my terrible calls about AFLW was I noticed Laura McClellan really laid someone out in the Bulldogs game, and I tweeted about it straight away because the commentator didn't even call her name, which annoyed me slightly, and then... when she did something later on, no one mentioned the fact that she was coming back from suspension because she did that hit in the Western Bulldogs game, which I didn't quite... Fremantle. Sorry, I'm getting my Western... My teams with the sort of West somehow in their conceptualization mixed up. But so it was that funny incident, which she was definitely being aggressive. I still don't quite know what happened, but the Fremantle player did stay down for a while, so whatever it was. So she's coming back, but she was just cracking in so hard, and I thought, right, I've got a new favourite here because she's just... hard at it, uncompromising player, doesn't get much of the footy, and then tweeted that, and then she had the season ending ankle injury, I think literally like 30 seconds after I pressed send, so I apologise for putting the mods.
Yeah.
And then shortly after that, I said, we're right in this game because all the stats at halftime were very even. And we're actually very unlucky. In the first quarter, I'm sure you remember, Nick, Katie Brennan's got jets, as we saw in the Gold Coast game. She was at the 50 with no one in front of her with the footy when the siren blew. But no one was stopping her. She was running that ball in for a goal. So we could have been in front at halftime, and we're right in that game, inside 50s or even, and then we just got blown away in the second half. So.
Well, yeah, and having multiple serious injuries being a part of that. It's been pretty tough. I think coulda, shoulda, woulda with the Suns game, although... probably the scoreboard flattered us a bit for that one.
The Suns game hurt. That was the sort of knife point, the most important game of the season. Although the Bulldogs weren't playing well before they played us, I think the Suns are really the team that are closest in our weight division. And the thing that really hurt about that, admittedly, she's really good, but the Suns' ruckman absolutely killed us. She's the best in the AFL, but they killed us in the clearances and they killed us in the hitouts, which hurt me.
That was frustrating.
But she's, I think, the best in the AFL, in the AFLW at the moment, so, full credit to her.
And we didn't have Poppy Kelly for that game.
No,
Gabby Seymour's our second leading possession winner, which is sort of both a good thing and a bad thing that we haven't got another midfielder to winning more ball. I have to admit, I've always very much supported the timing of AFLW, to play in summer. Australian Open side and maybe Big Bash, but there's just not as much competition from sport on television, and just having that space for to focus on the women's season. But yeah, the flip side being you're playing on rock hard grounds and people get injured a lot, and yeah, we really haven't solved that problem.
No, and look, we're not the ones who are going to solve it, but I'm certainly... Now, there is a structural issue that ACLs are an issue in women's footy at all levels.
Yeah,
but,
definitely. Women's sport at all levels, yeah.
But, as someone, anyone who's played football 30 degrees days, it sucks. And
yeah, with a rock-hard ground, yeah.
Yeah, so, look, I know, to me, I'm sure there's a million reasons which you haven't thought through, but I think there's real benefit in not playing at the same time as the men, or playing when the men are starting to wind down, so start playing in September. But I feel like I'm very unqualified to talk on this.
That's
issue.
A good point.
Because there's still plenty of rain in September and October, so the grounds are still soft.
Grounds are softer, and they play the VFLW as a winter sport, so you can pretty much go straight into it.
And with the greatest respect to people who like horse racing, I am not one of those people, and I'd be at that time of year is a complete dead zone for sport otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. God, international cricket tends not to start until at least mid-November. And yeah, no. Oh, well, we've solved.
Moving on.
I'm hoping our season gets better the next 2 weeks. Playing the Eagles and the Cats is much more in our weight division before a couple of tough games to finish the season against the Giants and the Lions.
Yeah, and of course we've got North this week, which may be slightly ugly, but we shall see.
I'd frankly mentally already skipped over that one. I'm not optimistic at all. It is going to be interesting to see how they manage the new teams, because they really, the teams at the top are still all the original teams, and there's still a huge advantage to incumbency. And you can see our top two draft picks in Stella Reed and Amelia Yassir, like they've clearly both got talent, but yeah, they're some time away from being really impact players. So yeah, I don't know. They need to sort it out.
I completely agree. I'm worrying about it because we've got arguably
winning,
the best player.
Winning is more fun than losing.
It is, and we've arguably got the best player in the AFLW, and we don't want to lose him.
Close to, yeah.
And I think Katie Brennan's an absolute superstar.
Oh yeah, and this podcast rides extremely hard for Ellie McKenzie as well.
Like, oh yeah, fair.
There's certainly some depth beyond that it wouldn't kill us to lose to the expansion teams, but yeah, definitely not any of those core star players.
So of course, Nick, it is also for this time of year for the men the time when preseason we start to see whether indeed the house is still standing or the reports have been premature, because soon they're actually going to have to play games of football against other teams.
Yep. Which is always, this is in some ways the most perfect time of year for the men, for, you know, just the pictures of fit, oiled athletes running endlessly in circles around Punt Road. I watched the video from the Bright camp, and as always, it was a source of almost no information, but looks like they had a nice time. But really, I'm surprised we've gone this long without mentioning how fit and muscled that Ivan Soldier looks.
Look, Nick, I've been closely reading the Australian Census guidelines, because I think the club has been putting out things that should come with a not safe for children warning. he just looks magnificent.
Yeah.
I know it's hard to explain. It's sort of, when I look at him, I think that, you know, he just makes all other men look inferior, feel inferior by his sheer perfection.
Yeah.
He's looking magnificent.
Yeah. There's been a lot of time for arm day, for leg day, you know.
Yep. His chest is looking big. Not any fat on him. Apparently kicked a 50-meter running goal at training the other day in a match simulation. It's just, I'm almost lost for it. It's going to be hard to adjust this expectation. Like, I'm sort of now expecting him to be a combination of Nick Natanui and Dean Cox at his prime.
Yeah. Have you had to brief the guys in your office that if it looks like you're having a stroke, it may be just that they've posted another training video?
Yeah, it's been hard for me, Nick. Like, I've actually gone to tweet a few things about it, and I just can't.
It's too much.
Yeah. Yep. So it's very exciting. It's great he's coming back. We'll talk about it. We'll do a bit of analysis of the three things we want from the season. But other than Soldo, who's obviously looking very fit and back, who else are you sort of feeling the buzz about from the preseason?
Well, to give you a couple of names, Riley Collier-Dawkins was very much the first cab off the rank, because the younger players come back first, and there was definitely some buzz about him. At the other end of the spectrum, Sydney Stack, it sounds like, didn't come back in the best of condition, but apparently has improved recently.
Some bloke wrote up a training report, and we should say that was actually from the club itself, which is fairly unusual for the club to say that themselves. Someone watched training today and said that he looked fine. So, you know, whatever. Mm. Grain of salt, obviously, yeah, but still nice.
There's some definite buzz around our first two draft picks in Josh Gibbs-Kiss and Tom Brown. Tom Brown, sort of very much the first of the draftees to start to get a mention, but, you know, Gibbs-Kiss looks really nice as well. Like, I mean, he's a young key position player, and he needs to put on weight, and I'm sure he will put on weight, but as we discussed on our last show, it'll take a couple of years, but yeah, he's a nice-looking footballer. So we had five draft picks, and the other three in Sam Banks, Justin Clark, and Tyler Sonsi, none of them have been in full training for all that long due to varying injuries, and I don't think Banks has been in full training at all, unfortunately. So, yeah, it's always, look, you know, we're always extremely careful with first-year draftees in pre-season, just because, you know, it's such a big step up getting into a full-time professional atmosphere. But yeah, I think maybe they're probably even being more careful with this crop, given what an interrupted 18 months these guys have had. So yeah, I'm excited about that latter three in a medium term sense, but pretty cautious about the year to come.
Yeah, that's fair. Swansea was playing match sim today.
Yeah, so that's good.
That is positive. And by the way, we're recording this on the 10th of February to give context. But yeah, so bit of hope there. And obviously Lambert's been killing it with the training. There's, even though Prestia had a small injury, apparently he's been training extremely well. Got him on the heavier weights, which considering how big his guns were, I thought he was already, but apparently not. And sort of interesting changing their routine that late in career, but if it gets him fitter, fantastic, because I think he's sort of was the... Look, I was thinking about the structure, and maybe we could lead this into, because we're going to have a segment coming up about three things we want to have for the preseason, and one of the things I wanted to talk about was our forward ruck center clearance balance. But is there something else that you wanted to talk about training the house down, Nick, before we have a little preseason preview?
I think let's move into it. I mean, just to explain, so the structure of the preseason, they've announced there's sort of two Challenge Cup games and a preseason to the preseason game against Geelong as well. So three games in total. Look, if you're asking me what I want to see from the preseason, I feel like if we can get through the preseason relatively smoothly, and obviously the Geelong game is the most vulnerable of them because they've got so many players who are comparatively higher risk. So, yeah, fingers crossed.
Indeed. I'm just looking forward to seeing it. So, look, we tried to do this when we talked. We wanted to do three things we both wanted to see from the preseason, and be not blindingly obvious about it, because obviously we don't want injuries. I try not to repeat the things I think I've said in the last two preseasons, which is I want RCD or Sydney Stack both to have really good preseasons, which I still do, but they're sort of, I think we've done that. And I think Ross emerging, I think multiple preseasons I've done, we want a young midfielder to step up and look like he's going to take the next step. Look, we've done it all before. So I tried to get something a bit different. Hopefully, Nick, I haven't just raised one of your points, but if I might start, I didn't start with Soldo because I'm just ridiculously overexcited already.
Taken for granted.
So there's going to be, the forward structure is going to be interesting, and the centre, and it starts at the centre square, because considering it was a bit of schmozzle last year, and we were, I think, bottom or second bottom in clearances, and I think they're probably, and they've been flexible about this, they're not dogmatic about this, but I think in their heart of heart, they're thinking their best 22 is both with Nank and Soldo playing. So you've got two rucks, and obviously we need Prestia fit, but that'll help the clearances a lot. But if you've got two rucks, that also affects your forward setup, because the sort of the question is this year, well, you know, how many tall forwards are we going to have? And there's a question of... obviously, we'll have Jack and Tommy, and then I don't think we'll play another third tall forward other than the resting ruck, would be my first guess. But there is a question. One thing I'd like to see in preseason is who's the most likely to play as the second tall if one of our two keys is down. I think resolving that question about who's the... You know, last year we had both Chole and CCJ as sort of the 3A and 3B option. And now I think it's a bit more unclear. So, some clarity in that, whether we shuffle round the back, or we play Noah a bit more forward because we've got more backline options and we shuffle that round. And if we're going to do that, we'd probably telegraph in the preseason a bit by giving him some meaningful minutes. I know he played some time forward in a match simulation at training, but that's not quite the same thing. So that would be, that's sort of my first point, is sort of clarity about who's the backup forward.
I think the top three candidates would be Sampson Ryan, Josh Caddy, and as you say, Noel Bolter.
Sorry. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I just had to. I quickly just Googled who Josh Caddy was. Yep, got it now.
Yep. Him kicked. Kicked 40 goals in a season where we finished up the ladder.
Yes, fair point. And has some premiership medals. What's your first choice, Nick?
I'd like to see what the succession plan looks like for some of these really key players. I think we've had a big drop off whenever Shane Edwards has been out of the team. So I'd like to see, with greater focus, who's going to take that sort of some of these leadership roles. And look, that's always hard to tell on ball, but I thought. There were times when we were really badly dependent on Dusty and Shea for creativity last year. So some creativity from somewhere I'd really like to see.
Totally fine with that. I completely agree. My second one is a quick one. Rioli didn't have a full preseason as a halfback last year or back pocket when he got the role. Love to see how he evolves with full preseason, really focusing on the role and having a chance to learn it properly. And I'd love to see evidence that he's going to take another step up in his play from the back line, particularly perhaps with his weighting and kick selection for the back line, which was not terrible last year, but there was a room for improvement.
For my second one, I'd really like to see maybe it's Ryan Mansell step up, or maybe it's another young defender. But I think we've had a great team, and most of those pieces are still in place, but. If we're going to really give the finals a crack, we need more, and we need it from both predictable and unpredictable players. So, yeah, I'd love... You said Dan Rioli, but I'd love to see Ryan Mansell take a step up.
Yeah, that's fair. It's quite a similar point, actually. And they've now...
We need them both, I think.
I completely agree. And they're different types of players, right? Interestingly, there's now plenty of people behind them in the queue after last year's draft. So, it's step up or move on. Okay, my third one's a really quick one, Nick. And it's sort of just a rehash of what we talked about in the draft preview. And it's ridiculous, and I know where you're drafted is where you're drafted, but I'm still excited about Sonzi's upside, and I really hope he gets a game and it flashes a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's a real show it and prove it for the coaching staff. Like, they've taken this guy that there were some character questions about, but he's got a lot of talent, so we've backed ourselves to get the most out of that talent. So, I think it'll take a while. I think he, some players need to put on weight. Like Sam Banks certainly needs to put on weight. I think. Sonzi actually needs to have a bit more good weight than what he does at the moment. But, yeah, huge talent. My third one, we are uncomfortably dependent on the development of Sampson Ryan as a footballer, certainly at least until Marte Kalina shows anything on, you know, organised game of football, which hasn't been the case so far. But yeah, we're with Chol and CCJ gone, he's a big part of our depth.
Yeah, actually, if you'd said if we had four points, that would have been he was going to be our next one. And look, I'm not going to lie, the Chol experience has soured me slightly on undersized rucks, and I think that's oversimplifying a complex set of factors in deciding your effectiveness as an AFL player. But I do worry about his size, and so seeing some proof of concept against the big boys in the AFL would be absolutely wonderful in the preseason. So fully endorsed.
I know. Whereas Marte Kalina would be the largest human to ever ruck in the AFL, and he's playing college basketball.
Yeah, which again, like, there's no. If you were to evaluate it fairly, that's is equally an unknown. But so yeah, but
yeah,
there's just something. Oh, it's better to be. It's better to be bigger than smaller, apparently, in our fan brain.
Yeah. So his season is going fine, but not so well as to make you think he's got a future in the NBA. So that's probably an ideal outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fairness to Marte, there's always the hope there because we haven't seen him play a game where he didn't get a touch in the AFL.
Well, and the club does keep talking him up.
Yes.
Like repeatedly, like Neil Baum, Matty Clark. Like, yeah. So, you know, seems fair enough.
Anyway, point is though now Sampson's time. This is Sampson's preseason to show something.
That's true. I think I enjoy preseason, but what it actually tells us is always a great big unknown. But there's not quite the same grinding sense of inevitable doom and dread about Richmond since, you know, we were the team of the last half decade. But yeah, I do. In a post premierships world, I'm finding it hard to calibrate expectations.
Yeah, it's wide open, isn't it? And genuinely, you can construct so many different theories about where you go, but there's no completely, again, one biased, one-eyed fan. There's no strong evidence. Like, none of the key players are showing strong evidence of drop off. Like, you know, as much as we love Koch, and he is showing some evidence of dropping off, he wasn't actually a statistically dominant player in our premiership years. So you can't use that as a sort of definitive edit. And apparently he's training really well, so it's quite likely Cochin will be as good this year as he has been for the last few years. And he's still providing a lot of on-field leadership. So, yeah, I mean, we've discussed this in previous podcasts, but the evidence, I mean, yes, it's definitely true that we might not make the eight because we fall off the cliff and a lot of the older guys have chronic injuries. But there's not... Shane Edwards is training really well. That there's no, there is. It's just as easily, if you're looking at it fair-mindedly, it's equally likely or more likely that we're a highly competitive team again.
Yeah, we have just done our classic thing of talked far more about Sampson Ryan than we did about the competition's best player coming back from a serious injury.
We have absolutely done that, haven't we? Who was in the match practice? Didn't go on the training camp, which, you know, fair enough. But as much as he would have loved those wacky gags they played on each other, or, you know, can you imagine being in Dusty's group and when you discover you've been cycling the wrong way for 20 minutes? Jesus, I mean, you'd be terrified, wouldn't you? I mean, not that he'd do anything. I'm just, you know, sorry, sir. Anyway, but yeah, he was full match practice looked really good. He's been looking good, so
yeah,
it looks hopeful.
Certainly looks lean. I mean, God, having been on a vegetable only diet was it vegetable only or fruit only or something? It sounded dreadful anyway.
It did, and I don't think, you know, I know because you have to produce preseason contact, this thing, oh, it's going to extend his season, it'll be even, but we don't know. You have to see it in the AFL when people are tackling hard.
It was a really serious injury. Like, I think the first proof of concept is that he doesn't have that really serious injury again.
Yeah, absolutely. He starts getting through games. So, yeah, well I think it's looking promising, but it's far too early to tell.
Which probably a good statement about the men's season as a whole.
Indeed. But I'm looking forward to preseason games and also the AFLW, which I will, despite our bad chances on the weekend, I will faithfully watch.
Yeah.
Now, Nick, is there anything about preseason? Because I've got a special sort of end of pod segment that's a little bit self-indulgent, but I just wanted to tell you about it.
Oh, no, go ahead.
So, I was driving an interstate trip recently, and my son enjoys the podcast, but he likes things like listening to things like after we've won a grand final. He didn't find the draft show so interesting. didn't have strong takes about whether Josh Gibbs can play forward. So he asked to listen to our first ever podcast.
Wow.
Which I was able to find. It was not easy to find, but you can find it. It's still there on the, if you look up Podbean app. I'll post a link to it on the second link to the show if people are interested. But our first ever episode was in 2011 before it was pre-season before the Carlton game.
Yep.
And I won't lie, Nick, it wasn't the smoothly, we didn't have the smooth radio voices we do now with no pauses. Yeah. You know, occasionally we said, you know. And
yeah, just, a bit we ummed and ahed it as well.
We did. Look, we worked a bit bluer than we do now.
Really?
Like there was no swearing, but the sort of the content on why we had Carlton was pretty strong. And like it was really, we were scarred, we were downtrodden, we were terrified of Carlton, which I know all sounds ridiculous, but we spent a long time on that and talked about a history of our hatred of Carlton. And so it was a strong start.
Yeah, strong start. Yeah, solid. So it certainly holds up well.
True. And, you know, it was raw, we were franker, but there's a few sort of on our analytical takes that you'll be, just to recap. To remind us how far we've come. We were quite worried about Nason and Webley were missing preseason at that stage. We dedicated a lengthy analysis to Helberg and Batchelor.
I loved Helberg. To be fair to us, Jake Batchelor did have a really good first season. But, Helberg came out of... He's always been a great cautionary tale about people who come out of South Australia with awesome stats, but the competition's not very good.
We were worried about our key position depth in the preseason, but we were somewhat reassured because Luke McGon was coming back from injury soon.
to be fair to us, Dylan Grimes had started the previous season in the VFL reserve, so he hadn't sort of blossomed in any way yet.
Oh, look, I'm not worried about the quality of the analysis. I'm just pointing out that there was once a time when Richmond supporters were excited about
Luke. How much did we talk about it, Angus Graham's biceps?
We're getting to Angus Graham. So Troy Taylor had kicked three goals in a VFL practice game. So we're excited about that. In a quarter, three goals in a quarter. So I waxed lyrical for quite a while about that and saying only special talents could do that, which is probably true. But yeah.
Is he one player who makes more of a fist of it if now when we've got a much stronger support network around for our Indigenous players?
True. He had a challenge.
There was a lot going on there.
Yeah. Thank you. I think we need to leave it at that. Every person is an individual. We loved Damien Hardwick. But we referred to him Beavis constantly, and I'm not sure if we explained who Beavis is, we said it once. So you needed to have the prior knowledge to listen to the podcast of seeing Beavis and Butthead. And it's funny that name has gone completely out of fashion. Speaking of nicknames, I think we might have explained it once, but again, maybe not, who the chimp was, which was the name, the old name for Trink Cotchin, because he had those hunched shoulders. Yeah. And, you know, especially in his younger days, he spent a long time hunching over the ball, picking it up. But yes, we obviously adored Cotchin to a ridiculous extent. Now, last 2 points, Nick. Angus Graham was talked about a lot by me.
Yeah.
And I went into a lengthy analysis.
Isn't he a child when they are seven?
I went to a lengthy analysis, which frankly I found quite pretentious when I re-listened to it, about Angus Graham's ruck style and that how I wanted him to stop dancing around in the concert, because he seemed to be avoiding contact a lot and not just jumping up and high-pointing it.
Mm.
And it was quite a lengthy analysis, and I don't know whether I was just being pretentious or whether... Well, I definitely was being that, but whether it was also a... Because I never second-guess Nank's ruck technique now. He just knows...
No.
He knows a million more things about rucking than I... And I think Soldo's really well-coached too, although obviously not as experienced. But I wonder whether it was partly just the frustration of Angus Graham, because, you know, he was a big boy and he didn't use it, or whether it was just... me not understanding a technique that Graham was using, but it was lengthy and it was painful, and it's probably not a good thing when you're saying you wish your ruckman would be a bit more physical in the ruck contest.
Yeah,
and I didn't completely finish, but at the 40 minute mark, guess who we hadn't mentioned?
Dusty.
Yep. So we haven't changed.
Oh, bless.
So, yes, the greatest player arguably ever to play for Richmond and arguably ever to play in the AFL. And we had
a great first season. Like, yes. he was, if not a star, sort of shown bursts of extraordinary talent in that first season. Oh, bless. Yeah, Angus Graham was... 201 centimetres and 106 kilos. So I think it probably was okay to be a little bit frustrated that he wasn't more physical. But I think that was much a coordination issue as anything else.
Who knows, Nick? I'm sure we discussed it for far too long on the pod, but not to be forgotten is what a transform... I know it's been commented on many times, but Ivan Marich's transformative change to our football team.
That's true. Yeah. And I still, you know, his leadership in the bubble up on the Gold Coast, you know, it, not a small thing for a player to transition, to stay at the club, you know, and to go from being a player and a peer to being a coach, and to do so seamlessly and, you know, without seemingly the, you know, he retired, you know, he was still on the list in 2017, although very much at the end of his career. So he's just missed out on this golden era, and just to not have the slightest resentment, and quite the opposite, to provide such leadership to the group. Yeah, we're very lucky.
Also, Graham brought me great joy by bringing his cousin to the football club.
Yeah. And now we've got Noah Bolter's, we've got Mate Kalina, but there's another cousin of Noah Bolter who's even bigger than Noah in the VFL team. So, bless. Well, for all of it, for all the to sort of circle back to where we started, for all the COVID weirdness, It's always so much better to have football than not.
I can't wait.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
You're talking about three flags by 2020.
Fitzroy has played more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010. Carmichael Hunt. Look at Jeffrey. He does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney.
Westcott can kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Can he just slow? He's gone.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Go Tigers.